BofA Merrill Lynch Global Industrials and EU Autos Conference. Thank you for being here. I'm Andrew Obin, BofA Merrill Lynch's multi-industrials analyst, and we're gonna kick things off today with 3M, one of the largest multi-industrials. 3M is our top pick. It's on the U.S. One list for the firm. We also featured it in our American Innovation Report, which came out last week, which was a collaborative piece in the department. I certainly invite you to look at it. And with us this morning, we have David Meline, Senior Vice President and CFO, and Matt Ginter, company's Vice President of Investor Relations. Thank you very much for being here. And with that, I will let David speak. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, good morning, all. Okay, so as Andrew said, I'm David Meline, the CFO of 3M, so glad to be here today. Actually, the first time we've had a chance to participate here in the conference in London. If you look at what I'm gonna do is spend, I guess, 20 minutes, I asked, to cover a pretty broad overview of 3M, in particular for those of you who don't know us well. So basically, if you look at our foundational strengths of the company, really five pillars that we base the company's business model on, and that would include, importantly, technology strength. Manufacturing know-how is key to the business model. We have a very global business model, so unparalleled global reach, and also a strong financial position. If you look at the filings we've done over the last decade, what you'd observe is that the company has delivered average annual earnings growth over the period of 11% annually on a GAAP basis, and 6% sales growth and 22% return on invested capital. Last year in February, we announced the transition to a new CEO. That would be Inge Thulin, who's a leader who's been with the company for about 30 years now, a little longer than 30 years. Spent a very significant portion of that, his last seven, was running our international businesses before he became COO and then CEO last year. And as part of the transition to CEO, then we announced on the day of his announcement the revised vision for the company, which is shown here, which is 3M Technology Advancing Every Company, 3M Products Advancing and Enhancing Every Home, and 3M Innovation Improving Every Life, which I think is descriptive of the company, which has a broad reach in terms of our products, technologies, and markets. We also spent the year then last year, we rolled out a series of six strategies for the company over the coming 5 years, and we really invested very heavily in engaging our leadership team in developing these strategies deep within to the company. So if you look at the strategies, the first two are really focused around market presence, so expanding our relevance to our customers, as well as improving our market share and market penetration. The third strategy, as I said earlier, very key to our business model, which is continuing to invest in innovation. The fourth strategy is a strategy we've been working on for a number of years, and that continues, which is to fully build out the global business model, not only in terms of our sales around the world, but also in terms of having a deep presence in R&D and manufacturing across all of the geographies. Fifth, of course, a key issue for us is building our global talent pool around the world. And then finally, an important part of the model is operational excellence. If you look at the business sectors that, as we're organized, we actually, at year-end, had a look. Well, as part of the strategy development last year, we looked at the lineup of the business, which had been unchanged for about a decade, and we concluded that we wanted to make some modest changes here to better align our segments to our end markets. So We went from six to five sectors, which are listed here. Our largest, at about $10 billion of sales last year, a third of the company is in the industrial space, followed by our healthcare business, our consumer business, our safety and graphics business, and electronics and energy. As you can see, last year, in total, we did $30 billion of sales, $6.5 billion of operating income with a 22% operating margin. The core of the business model, as I've said a couple times already, is really around innovation. What this chart captures is an index that we use, the New Product Vitality Index, which for us, we believe is an important indicator of how innovation is really going within the company. This is a measure of the percent of our sales revenue that's related to products that were launched within the last five years. You can see last year, a third of our products were those that were launched within the prior five-year period, which compares favorably to the 25% level we were at in 2008. We have a directional vision for the company. We continue to believe there's opportunity for us to improve on the index in a positive way. We have a directional goal to get to 40%. One of the things, last November then, we rolled out our long-term plan for the company for the next five years. One of the things we identified in that plan was that we would be expecting by the end of the five-year period to increase our spend that's directed to R&D. We've been running here in the last decade in somewhere in the 5%-5.5% of revenue zone throughout the period, which has been supportive of, as I've shown, a rising NPVI index. As we discussed internally to the company last year, areas that were going well and areas that we thought we could do better at, one of the things we concluded was that we felt there was an opportunity for us on the margin to increase slightly the intensity of R&D, and specifically, the focus of this increase is looking for investment towards some of the longer-term, higher-risk breakthrough technology opportunities that we might find. As we looked at our core R&D investment, this 5.5% we had last year, what we saw was our businesses, as they make trade-offs and prioritize their R&D spend, they tend to, of course, prioritize towards projects which would show revenue and income within the one to three-year period. On balance, we felt that it would be appropriate to up our investment towards some of the longer-term opportunities where you typically see more of a three to seven-year type timeframe before you'd see some outcomes. We've set up actually a fund that's run by myself, the CEO, and our head of technology, where we look at proposals for investments in new technology areas that we think will be important for the company in the future. Another one of the key goals we announced in November was our view of revenue growth over the next five years. You can see here on the left side of the chart, we indicated that our goal for the organic growth for the company would be 4%-6% over the next five years, which we calculated to be at 1.5x industrial production. If you look at the company's performance over the last decade, we've run at about 1.5x IPI, and we felt that that was a good goal. It was an achievable goal for the company going forward. As we looked at the outlooks for IPI in the economy, we then built out this 4%-6% goal. As you can see, probably no surprise, we continue to think that the best opportunities for growth for the company lie in the emerging markets, where we think we will continue, as we have in the last decade, to see basically a range centered on double-digit growth there with more modest growth opportunities in developed markets. in that regard, if you look at the mix of the company's sales, last year we had roughly two-thirds of our sales were still remained in developed markets, whereas our developing market sales have grown from 21% to 34% in the last decade. And based on the growth that I showed you on the prior page, we think that mix then will shift towards 40 to 45% of our sales being in emerging markets here by the end of the five-year period. So how do we do that? How does our model work as we invest and grow our businesses around the world? Well, it's a pretty well-established pattern for us. And basically what happens is, as we enter a market in early stages of development, typically what you see is we offer our products and business opportunities are more in the infrastructure development area. Then as economies mature, they tend to build a manufacturing sector, which we will then enter more vigorously with our industrial product segments. As those economies mature, they become focused on things like safety, so we build out our safety business. And then finally, in the later stages of development of these economies, as their consumer segments modernize, as their per capita income goes up, then they tend to be a good match for our product portfolio and our consumer businesses. And then finally, as a regulatory environment modernizes and people again have better per capita income, then the healthcare offerings that we provide are typically the ones that where you see the best opportunities. So if you look at our Latin American region, which is the most mature of the emerging market segments for us, you see that the portfolio of businesses that we have and the percent of our sales across our different sectors largely now mirrors 3M's average portfolio in its totality, whereas if you look at some of the other emerging markets, so for example, in emerging Asia and Central and Eastern Europe, you see still that the portfolio is more concentrated towards products that are focused on infrastructure and industrial, and we're very actively now building out the consumer and healthcare portfolios in those markets as those markets mature and there's a better match for our business portfolio. Another component of our strategy is acquisitions. The company set out a plan here to deploy about $1 to $2 billion annually towards that purpose. And basically, the way we approach acquisitions is really these are outcomes from strategic plans of each of our 40 divisions, where they identify gaps that they might have, whether that be in brands, whether it be in geographies or technologies. And then we'll identify opportunities to fill those either organically or sometimes inorganically through acquisitions. This is the list of the three acquisitions we did last year. One was in our traffic safety division, which is in the electronic tolling space that we felt was an opportunity where we've been driving towards. And by buying Federal Signal's tolling business, it gives us a chance to enter more actively into that space. CodeWright is a natural language processing software company. We have a healthcare information systems business that's very highly penetrated into U.S. Hospital markets, and the technology there is moving towards natural language processing, so we acquired this company as an extension of that business. And then finally, Ceradyne was a transaction that we completed last year in the fourth quarter. And this is an advanced ceramics materials company, which is a platform where the company has had a very significant, 3M's had a significant presence for decades in the ceramic space. But our expertise has been more in soluble ceramics, so ceramics that the manufacturing process technology is in liquid form, and this company has deep expertise in ceramics that are produced in powdered form. So we've been trying to get into that space for quite some time, and eventually concluded that a better path to add that to the portfolio was through acquisition. So we acquired Ceradyne last year. Operational excellence, one of the six strategies of the company. Not unlike many other companies these days, we've used Lean Six Sigma here now for about a decade in the business. We don't talk about it as much as some, but if you think about a company that consistently delivers operating margins in excess of 20%, it's quite clear the only possibility to achieve that on an ongoing basis is to have a strong footprint and a strong focus in terms of operational excellence. So we use Lean Six Sigma very actively. It's well established. And the best focus areas for now, for us right now, are really focusing as we build out our presence in a number of emerging markets, moving from operations that are more sales focused to ones that are complete businesses with R&D and manufacturing, then it's important for us to bring along with that capabilities, including Lean Six Sigma. If you look at our return to shareholders, a very important part of our business model, the company's increased its dividend for 55 years consecutively and paid out for 96 years now in a row. We expect to grow dividends over the next 5 years in line with earnings, and we announced an 8% increase here in February. And then finally, stock repurchase. We announced in our November meeting that we expect to repurchase somewhere between $7.5 and $15 billion over the next 5 years. In addition to the $18 billion that we deployed over the last decade. And this, we would expect with this level of repurchase that we would add 1% to 2% annually to our EPS growth. So finally, to conclude, this is the key financial metrics that we're driving towards as a company over the next 5 years, which is to continue to deliver double-digit earnings growth. We set out a goal of 9 to 11% annually over the period. As I've referred to, 4 to 6% organic revenue growth is a key driver of that earnings growth over the period. We expect and set a goal for ourselves, as we have over a number of decades, to continue to deliver return on invested capital at 20% or more. And we added a fourth goal, which we hadn't previously formalized, but we think important to the model, is free cash flow conversion. Over the last decade, we've delivered conversion at 99% of net income, and so we thought a 100% goal was a good one for the next 5 years. So, Andrew, with that, I would be happy to take some questions.
You know, because one of the questions investors ask when we talk about 3M is capital redeployment. And specifically, when you announced your latest share buyback program, if I look at your history in terms of gross share buybacks, you were between $2 to $2.5 billion. You still had, I believe, $2.5 billion remaining in your authorization. Right. And yet you chose to up authorization by quite a bit, you know, even though you didn't have to. And just trying to understand if there is a message here, given that your free cash flow conversion is improving, that maybe you're going to, on the margin, return more cash to shareholders going forward.
Right. So, yeah, so in terms of the capital allocation plan that we announced in November, we really wanted to try to make it a balanced plan to ensure that we have sufficient capital directed towards growth, that being organic and inorganic, But as you say, fortunately, the company does have very strong cash flow generating capability, and return to shareholders, we think, is something that's very important to the proposition of 3M. So we did announce, as I mentioned here, $7.5 to $15 billion share buyback, which would reflect up to 2% annual reduction on net share count. And that compares to around a 1% reduction on share count over the last decade. So as we looked at the cash flow capability of the company and the demands on our capital from the various uses, we concluded that that it was reasonable to set out a buyback plan, as I said, of 7.5 to 15 over the period.
Can we talk about just sort of margins for, it's my favorite topic, for 3M going forward? You know, if you look back what took place over the past decade, you know, you had optical film business drag. I guess you were more focused on top line, I would say. You know, just strategically seems the company needed to reinvigorate the growth process. And where you are right now, you have pretty significant exposure to emerging markets where your margins seem to be structurally higher. The end market you guys are pushing is healthcare, where margins are structurally higher. You just put 8% of the business under strategic review, you know, with a view to improve or to do something. So what should we be thinking about, you know, historically, my understanding, you guys, it was a balance between top line and margin, but given that you seem to have more tailwinds going forward than maybe in the past 5 years, how should we think about the relationship between top line and margin and ability to achieve positive operating leverage as you grow?
Sure. So, yeah, so if you look at the recent history in the company, there was a period in the early part of the last decade when there was a very focused effort to make sure the company was running and organized as efficiently as possible. The company had been running with operating margins in the mid-teens in the 2000 period, and we saw then that the company, by, I don't want to say reorganizing, but refocusing, was able to move its margin performance up into the low 20% range and has remained there over the last 7 years. So, and as you pointed out, the question then is, how do we balance opportunity going forward? And quite frankly, the way we view this is a trade-off between growth and margins. And as we sit today in the low 20% range and looking forward, and given the choices that we would have either to move our margins up from there, which we certainly believe we can, and versus reinvesting to grow the business, our feeling is that, at least for the present time, the right choice for us is, as we plan the businesses, is we encourage our businesses to think about how they can continue to deliver margins that are at, or if they've already been above, the company average, like our healthcare business, continue to deliver margins at those levels, and how they can look for opportunities to reinvest to improve our growth profile. So our basic posture has been most recently and will remain the same, that on the margin, we're inclined to identify, if we can, where we can reinvest to upper growth rate, because we think that's the best path to incremental value creation for the company. And quite frankly, we don't feel like we've cracked the code fully on the answer to that question.
So let me ask you another question, is sort of on growth. So, you know, you have this 1.5 time IPI multiplier, right? But my understanding, you've came up, you looked at it, looking at it, you know, prior decade, that's sort of the genesis of this target.
Right.
I'll go back to optical film business.
Sure.
Was a big drag. You are more focused on execution, I believe. You haven't had, like, global head of lean.
Right.
It's just there does seem to be more execution focus now. You have much more exposure now to emerging markets where your IPI multiplier is quite a bit higher.
Sure.
So, you know, what would make you change your view on the target? Is it just getting more comfortable with the growth opportunity and execution under new leadership? Because the numbers do seem conservative. You run, you know, healthcare, emerging markets.
Right.
Strategic portfolio review, no optical film headwind, you know, and you're sort of targeting the growth that's very similar to what you did over the past decade.
No, well, yeah. I mean, I think it's a fair comment, Andrew, which is if you look at the goals we set out for ourselves over the period, our view is we wanted to set out a set of goals that, A, describe the value proposition of 3M in an accurate way, and B, describe 3M as who we are rather than something who we wish we were.
Right.
And so if you look at those goals, we do think those are achievable goals given some reasonable level of economic growth in the economy.
Right.
But our intention is to describe who we are and something that we think we have a solid chance to achieve. And of course, we're always driving with the litany of different things we're working on to drive to see if we can certainly achieve and if things go well, that we would have the chance to perform beyond that. But we think that's the right posture for the company, because sometimes if you set out goals for yourselves that I don't want to use, it could turn out to be unrealistic. I think it can become a distraction at times, and you risk getting yourself out of balance as to what you're good at and where you need to work at. So we tried to set out what is a reasonable set of goals. There are always unexpected challenges that come up in the business, and you know, we're not naive to that possibility. So we tried to provide something that's a balanced view of 3M. Yeah.
Could I ask you about the on the 4-6% growth, the pricing component of that? Is it a more challenging next 5 years to get price, and it's a bit of a hit and miss, or what's the price component? How does it compare?
No, it's a good question. Yeah, and what I'd give you is a little bit of background. So for us, as we measure price, we measured on products that have been the price performance on products that are already in the market. So in our model, obviously, a very important part of the model is having a very strong new product pipeline, where we provide innovative new products which provide a very strong cost value proposition for our customers. And so if you look at our margin performance over time, implicit in that is a very strong price performance driven by new product innovation, which doesn't show up in our price index. If you look at the price as we measure it on launch products, over the recent years, it's been pretty close to flat. And that is typically our electronics businesses, which in consumer electronics are OEM businesses where you have a structural price down on a continuing basis, off matched against the majority of our portfolio where we have typically modest price increases over time. And so when you look at the weighted average, it comes in at a pretty flat performance level. And what we expect going forward is something, we don't see anything that's dramatically different than that going forward. And the key, as I said, is for us, is frankly, our model is all about obsoleting ourselves before we become commoditized and introducing products that offer, you know, a proposition that provides value to the customers. And so while price is quite relevant to us, probably more relevant to drive the margins of the company is actually that new product vitality index.
And sort of the talk of the other way around, customers coming to you and being incrementally more combative on, you know, why not bring prices down, or those kind of discussions?
We don't see it. It doesn't feel any different to us today than it has in the past. Again, normally our customer relationships are primarily around what are their biggest pain points and how can we put together a combination of our technologies to address those pain points that'll create value for them and offer us a profit opportunity. So that tends to be more of our dialogue than defending ourselves against products that are commoditizing. What I would say to you is we are very cognizant of the changing competitive dynamics, and in particular, we're always looking for, in these emerging markets, the new competitor that we don't know yet, because we know our traditional competitors, we know how they behave, we've been successful in competing in the market over time, but where we are particularly focused is those new guys who come in, and thus far, it's been a very important part of the model to have a strong local presence where we can see that happening, because sitting in St. Paul, Minnesota, we might not necessarily observe those new competitors arising, but having a strong presence in those emerging markets with businesses that are run by local leadership, they're the ones who are seeing those competitors come in. And one of the reasons we're building out our global R&D portfolio is we know that our best response to that type of a threat is to have local R&D in those countries so we can be innovating to meet the needs of those customers around the world. And so far, knock on glass, it seems to be working very well.
Can you just talk about what are you seeing? You know, I think one of the themes for this conference was just some uncertainty about the global macro outlook. You know, you touch so many companies, so many clients, and so many different parts of the world. What are you guys seeing? And last quarter, by the way, was such a nice surprise in terms of organic growth for you guys. So where is the momentum?
Yeah, so just to kind of recap the recent trends in our business, last year we had organic revenue growth of 2.5%, and if you look at that growth, it was basically steady at 2% during the first 9 months, and then we had a very nice fourth quarter where we had 4% growth. That growth was accentuated in the fourth quarter by an increase in our consumer business where we had 9% growth, which we were very pleased with. But we don't think was an indication that we're at a new higher level of growth for that business, which I'll talk about. And the other area where we saw improved performance in the fourth quarter was we did see a pickup of growth in China where we did a 17% increase versus basically flat for the year. So both of those were quite encouraging signs for us. As we look to 2013, with that backdrop, what we did provide was guidance that we expect growth in 2013 to be in the 2 to 5% range, so very similar type of growth pattern to what we experienced in 2012. And we also, as we looked out, what we saw were a couple of things. One, if you look at the consumer business, we indicated we expect 2 to 5% growth in that segment, so versus the 9 in the fourth quarter, because there were a few factors that that enabled such a nice print in the fourth quarter. One was our customers, we see increasingly delaying their purchases for the holiday season as close as possible to the holiday season, so that pulled some growth out of Q3 into Q4. And also we had, as it turned out, a better holiday season than we'd had for several years. So we expect the consumer business to be running at a more normalized level, if you will, the company average in 2013. And then secondly, specific to China and how that translates now into 13, we indicated in January on the call that we think that that electronics, consumer electronics, will have a tougher first quarter, and that's related to we could see some inventory destocking we expected to occur here in the first quarter. We see, if you look at the semiconductor builds, we could see that was trending off somewhat. So we indicated that we thought that we would see some softer level of sales in that sector in the first quarter, in the first half, and that would be impacting also the headline print in China. So what we see is in 2013, we continue to believe that it'll be a fairly mixed picture of growth. We're operating pretty steady in the U.S. and Latin America. In Asia, more mixed. Japan has a number of challenges as the economy evolves there. And also what we're observing is, as we'd expected, Western Europe continues to have a number of challenges. We'd indicated that Western European growth in 2013 would be in a range of -3 to +1. And from everything we can see right now, that continues to be our view.
Back to your first point on the use of cash. Do you mind elaborate a little bit on M&As? And if possible, try to give us a sense of which kind of metrics you look at when you go for an acquisition. Size, if possible. I'm not sure what your cost of debt is. And obviously, if you feel there is any area where you're not as good as you would like to be at the moment. Any region or segment?
Okay, that's a long list. So I'll try to hit them, and if I miss some, come back to them. So if you look at our M&A activity as a company, a couple things. One is our approach with M&A is, well, let me say the following. 3M has been, and we expect to continue to be, primarily an organically driven innovation company. So we have a very strong innovation culture in the company. We basically have a portfolio of some 46 technologies where we have deep expertise in those. And the business model that we use is really those technologies are a single asset of the company that are shared by all of the businesses. So they have access to any of those technologies as they might apply in their end markets. And where we do best is when we have unique and novel combinations of technologies, so typically 2, 3, 4, even 6 different technologies in combination, which create novel solutions for the different end markets. So with that as background, despite the view of some of my team in the R&D space, we conclude we won't invent everything ourselves. Even maybe we could, but it's about time and prioritization. So we use acquisitions as a means by which we can then fill gaps in divisional strategic plans. So if there's a technology gap that they might have or a product gap, or sometimes there might be a local brand presence where by acquiring in a country we can jumpstart our efforts in the consumer space. So different reasons why we would acquire, but in the end, it's basically to fill gaps in our portfolio in a more timely and efficient manner. And so we encourage all of our 40 divisions to be pursuing their strategic plans, which can include acquisitions. And so there's always a very active pipeline. And this is, as you can understand, a bottoms-up type approach to identifying targets. And then if you look at the size, what I would say is we've indicated that based on our experience, and we've deployed about $6 billion over the last recent years towards acquisitions, what our experience has told us is that where we do best is with businesses that typically come in towards the larger end of the scale of size that we've done. And so What do I mean by that? Our average division, its revenue is somewhere between $750 and $1 billion. So a big deal for them might be $250 million. And so somewhere north of the average of, well, what I'd say is as we get to smaller, say $50 million or less, our experience has not been as good in acquiring businesses. And I think partly it's because if they're too small, they don't get the priority they need to really make them successful. So we've encouraged our businesses to look towards the ones that are, you know, starting at a 200 or more, can make more sense for us in terms of the likelihood of success. The criteria that we use from a financial perspective in assessing acquisition candidates is really one where the debate we have when we look at candidates is to convince ourselves that if we acquire a business that over time we can expect it to deliver what we call 3M-like returns. So think about 20% operating margins and 20% return on capital thresholds are what we expect of our own businesses over time. And so if they're acquiring a business, it's quite unusual to find businesses with that type of profile at the time you acquire it. But we need to look at it and convince ourselves that either by using our global distribution capability, by plugging in the technology capability into the portfolio and making those connections with our own technology stable, that we can over time create that kind of return profile for the business. And when we do convince ourselves, then we will proceed. And what it also helps us to do is we look carefully at the return characteristics because we try to maintain a pretty good discipline in terms of being able to pay a price where we can expect to generate an economic return for the company over time.
I believe we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.